Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Text 41, Chapter 8, Canto 1, Prayers by Queen Kunti. Ata Vishvesa Vishvatman Ata Vishvesa Vishvatman
Ata Vishvesa Vishvatman
Vishva
Murte
Swakeshu
Me
Vishva Murte Swakeshu Me
Vishva Murte Swakeshu Me
Sneha,
Sneha
Pasam,
Pasam
Imam
Chindi
Sneha Pasam Imam Chindi
Sneha Pasam Imam Chindi
Dridam,
Dridam
Pandushu,
Pandushu
Rishnishu,
Rishnishu
Dridam Pandushu Rishnishu
Dridam Pandushu Rishnishu
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Vishva Murte Swakeshu Me
Vishva Murte Swakeshu Me
Sneha Pasam Imam Chindi
Sneha Pasam Imam Chindi
Dridam Pandushu Vrishnishu
Dridam Pandushu
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Vishva Murte Swakeshu Me
Vishva Murte Swakeshu Me
Sneha Pasam Imam Chindi
Sneha Pasam Imam Chindi
Dridam Pandushu Vishnishu
Dridam Pandushu Vishnishu
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Vishvamurte Swakeshu Me
Vishvamurte Swakeshu Me
Sneha Pasham Imam Chindhi
Sneha Pasham Imam Chindhi
Dridhang Pandushu Vrishnishu
Dridhang Pandushu Vrishnishu
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Vishvamurte Svakeshmu me,
Vishvamurte Svakeshmu me,
Snehe Pasham Imam Chindi,
Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi,
Dridham Pandushu Vishnu, Vrishnishu,
Dridham Pandushu Vrishnishu,
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman,
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman,
Vishvamurte Svakeshmu me,
Vishvamurte Svakeshmu me,
Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi
Dridham Pandushu Vrishnishu
Ata
Vishvesha Vishvatman
Vishvamurte
Svakeshu Me Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi
Dridham Pandushu Vrishnishu
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Vishvamurte
Svakeshu Me
Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi
Dridham Pandushu Vrishnishu
Ata
Vishvesha Vishvatman
Vishvamurte
Svakeshu Me Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi
Dridham Pandushu
Vrishnishu
Ata Vishvesha Vishvatman
Vishvamurte Svakeshu Me
Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi
Dridham Pandushu Vrishnishu Okay. Ata.
Ata.
Excuse me.
Therefore.
Vishva Isha.
Vishva Isha.
O Lord of the Universe.
O Lord of the Universe.
Vishva Atman.
Vishva Atman.
O Soul of the Universe.
O Soul of the Universe.
Vishva Murte.
Vishva Murte.
O personality of the universal form.
O personality of the universal form.
Svakeshu.
Svakeshu.
Unto my own kinsmen.
Unto my own kinsmen.
May.
My.
Snehapasam.
Snehapasam.
Tie of affection.
Tie of affection.
Imam.
Imam.
This.
This.
Chindi.
Chindi.
Cut off.
Cut off.
Dridam.
Dridam.
Deep.
Deep.
Pandushu,
Pandushu,
for the Pandavas,
Rishnishu,
for the Rishnis also.
For the Rishnis also.
All right, come on in, have a seat. Is this your first time?
No.
Yeah. Oh, so you're prepared to leave?
Yeah, I well.
Okay, well, as you like. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Prabhupada.
O Lord of the Universe.
O Lord of the universe.
O Soul of the Universe.
O Soul of the universe.
O Personality of the Form of the Universe.
Please, therefore.
Sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen. The Pandavas. And the Vrishnis. So who's speaking? Queen Kunti. And who's she speaking to? And who's telling the story? The Sutta?
Still Sutta, right?
Sutta telling what Sukadeva Goswami told to Maharaj Parikit. I think. I like to do that every now and then so that I always keep the big picture in mind as we chunk down to the small pieces. Otherwise it can get very confusing. Purport. A pure devotee of the Lord is ashamed to ask anything in self-interest from the Lord. But the householders are sometimes obliged to ask favors from the Lord, being bound by the tie of family affection. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and therefore she prayed to the Lord to cut off the affectionate tie from her own kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. So Kunti, she's related to the Pandavas and she's related to the Vrishnis. Krishna is related to the Vrishnis. Krishna is her nephew, correct? And Kunti is a Vrishni because who is Kunti's brother?
Vasudev.
So that's in the Vrishni line. So therefore, Krishna is, Kunti is Krishna's auntie. And so she's related to the Pandavas and to the Vrishnis. She's related to the Pandavas because she's given birth. She was married to King Pandu and gave birth to became the mother of the five Pandavas. So she has an affection for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis, particularly. The Pandavas are her own sons, and the Vrishnis are the members of her paternal family. Krishna was equally related to both the families. Both the families required the Lord's help because both were dependent devotees of the Lord. Srimati Kunti Devi wished Sri Krishna to remain as her sons, with her sons, the Pandavas. But by his doing so, her paternal house would be bereft of the benefit. I have to read that again. Srimati Kunti wished Sri Krishna to remain with her sons, the Pandavas. But by his doing so, her paternal house would be bereft of the benefit. I see. Her paternal house would be the Vrishnis. So if Krishna stayed with the Pandavas, then she understood that the Vrishnis would suffer. Separation. I'm not going to answer any questions right at this point. We want to keep it going, the train going here. All these partialities troubled the mind of Kunti, and therefore she desired to cut off the affectionate tie. Wow, did we lose power here?
Cut off the affectionate power.
Cut off.
For some reason, this just died out. But the light's on. So, Kunti is conflicted here. So Kunti is conflicted here because she has affection for both families, and she's a little bit fed up with her affection, it appears. She's understanding that this affection or attachment is causing suffering. I mean, the root cause of suffering is ignorance. Ignorance of the self. And due to ignorance of ourself, we become attached to our body, and then we also become attached to our relatives, and then we become attached to our home local place. You know, we become attached to our tribe previously. Now we become attached to our local area. And see, I'm attached to the shirt I'm wearing here. You see what it says, Dirt Lab, on it? Yeah. So this is my son's mountain bike promotional company. So when I wear this shirt, I'm feeling some pride because I'm attached to my son. And I'm attached to Pacifica. I'm attached to San Francisco, where I was born. So it's working now, okay. And Rishabhdev, he says as much too. I'm trying to think of the verse. He says, Pumsam striya maituni bhava metam tuyor api Grantamahur, ato riyashata susceptivitai janasya mahoya mahamemeti. This is that man and woman, they become attracted to each other because of sexual desire, and then once they unite, that becomes like a big knot in the heart. And from that expands children. One becomes attached to his children, one becomes attached to the place that he lives, the kshetra. And he identifies as everything as I and mine. So this is in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. So Kunti, as she's talking here, she's becoming cognizant of her attachment for Krishna and for the Pandavas and for the Rishnis. She's becoming aware of her as if she was a mundane, materially attached person. Of course, it's good to be attached to the Pandavas and to Krishna and to the Vrishnis. But as a normal, materially attached person, she's seeing that, wow, this is a big cause for suffering, because whatever we're attached to in this material world, we can't keep it. It will change. And when it changes, then we suffer. We can't hold on. And we may think, well, maybe let's finish this purport and then we'll talk about these points. A pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. The typical example is the band of the six Goswamis, who followed the path of Lord Chaitanya. All of them belonged to the most enlightened and cultured rich families of the higher castes. But for the benefit of the mass of population, they left their comfortable homes and became mendicants. To cut off all family affection means to broaden the field of activities. Without doing this, no one can be qualified as a brahmana, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord. The personality of Godhead as an ideal king showed this by example. Sri Ramachandra cut off the tie of affection for his beloved wife to manifest the quality of an ideal king. Such personalities as Brahmins, a devotee, a king, or a public leader must be very broad-minded in discharging their respective duties. Srimati Kunti Devi was conscious of this fact, and being weak, she prayed to be free from such bondage of family affection. The Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe, or the Lord of the universal mind, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. Therefore, it is sometimes experienced that the Lord, out of his special affinity towards a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. By doing so, he causes the devotee to become completely dependent on him and thus clears the path for his going back to Godhead. So talking about this last point, I've been reading in the eighth canto the pastime of Vamanadeva and Bali Maharaj surrendering to Vamanadeva. And of course, after Bali surrendered to Lord Vishnu, he arrested Bali Maharaj and he tied him up and actually humiliated him. You know. And of course, all the demigods, the demons, his wife, his mother, Prahlad Maharaj, his grandfather, they were all watching this, you know, as Bali Maharaj surrendered and then was being humiliated. And then afterwards, they began to all offer their prayers and their interpretations of these various events. And I forget who was speaking. It might have been Prahlad Maharaj. He was saying that, and we've heard this before, that when Krishna really favors a devotee, he takes everything away from him. And Prabhupada, he also tells this story in his own life, saying that his plan was, you know, to become a rich merchant and help and donate all the proceeds to the Gaudiya Mat to help preaching. So Prabhupada wanted to expand his business. He didn't have a selfish motivation. His only motivation was to help his spiritual master. But then he lost everything. One of his servants embezzled and mismanaged, and somehow suddenly Prabhupada lost everything, and then his family members began to reject him because he wasn't providing for them anymore. And Prabhupada was a little bit bewildered by that, you know, wondering, why has this happened? You know, and when Prabhupada tells the stories, the some of the devotees that were hearing this, they were laughing. And Prabhupada said, "No, you shouldn't laugh. I was really suffering. I became very morose. When Krishna takes everything away and we're attached, we suffer. It's not a laughing matter." The devotees were thinking, "Oh, Srila Prabhupada, you're transcendental. Nothing could hurt you, you know." Prabhupada said, "No, I was attached, and it hurt." So that it's mentioned in this pastime with Vamanadeva and Bali Maharaj that when Krishna really favors a devotee, he takes everything away. But then there's actually a higher situation. The higher situation is that when Krishna really favors a devotee, he gives him everything, because the devotee is not attached. So we saw that also happen in the life of Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would often say, he said that Krishna, he took away my family, I lost my family, but actually then I gained another family, and a much bigger family, and a much nicer family. And he said that now my sons and daughters, they're taking care of me, my spiritual sons and daughters are taking care of me much nicer than my wife and my sons were, biological wife and sons were taking care of me. So that's actually even a higher situation that when Krishna trusts the devotee so much, he understands that the devotee is so attached to Krishna that he has no material attachment. Therefore, Krishna, he doesn't fear giving material facility to the devotee. But either way, Krishna is the well-wisher of the Brahmins and of the devotees, and he always has our interest at heart. Unlike the demigods, if you pray to a demigod for some particular benediction that may not be good for yourself, that may simply increase your material attachment, the demigods will fulfill that desire. But if you pray to Lord Vishnu to fulfill your material desires, they may not get fulfilled. Although it's said in the Bhagavatam, karma savakama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushampuram, that the intelligent person, he may have material desires, he may desire liberation, or he may have no desires, but the actual intelligent person, he approaches the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he understands that he's the boss. And ultimately, he's the one who should be worshipped, and it's by his will you can fulfill your desires. But people know that if you worship Vishnu, if you worship Krishna, he may not fulfill your material desires. If it's not good for you, he won't. Or he'll make an arrangement in such a way that he'll frustrate you at first, and then maybe later on fulfill your desire. So I'm thinking of Dhruva Maharaj was that sort of case, right? That initially, you know, he was treated very badly. You know, his brother got treated very nicely by the king, but because his mother wasn't favored by the king, he didn't get such a nice position, and he became very angry about that. And then he went to the forest to worship Lord Vishnu to fulfill his desire. And then when he finally saw the Lord, he lost his material desire. He saw how insignificant it was. But then the Lord fulfilled it anyway afterwards. He said, yeah, I'll give you a kingdom much better than your father's. And an eternal kingdom. So he has an eternal planet. That's the pole star. Prabhupada has told us that the north star is Dhruva Maharaja's planet, and it's an eternal planet that's never destroyed. Same with Bali Maharaj. You know, after he gave everything to the Lord, and then he lost everything, and then he was humiliated. That wasn't the end. He was sent to the lowest planet, Sutala Loka. And then Lord Vishnu sent him there. But he said, I'll stay there as your doorkeeper. And you'll see me in my Vishnu form. You'll see me every day. And his planet became more opulent than all the demigods. So Krishna, again, put him in a very high, significant position like that. And also Krishna said that even though your planet will be so opulent, you don't have to worry about falling into Maya. He says, because you'll be able to see me every day, you won't fall into Maya. And Prabhupada, he points out in the purport, he says, therefore, if we come to the temple every day and we worship, we see the deity form of the Lord, and we take pleasure in looking at the beautiful form of Radha and Krishna, and smelling the incense, and taking the prasadam, and smelling the flower garlands, and enjoying this beauty, then we won't fall victims to Maya. So we have to get that higher taste. So this is the beauty of bhakti yogas. So I think every devotee, in our own experience, after years and years of practice, we can see that Krishna knows our intimate material desires. You know, he knows every desire that we've had before we've taken birth, and every desire that we've cultivated in this life. He knows them intimately. He's in our heart, and he can actually smell them. It's kind of an obnoxious smell. But he knows exactly what they are, and we can see in our own experience how Krishna will frustrate us and reveal our attachments. And then maybe later on, after we don't want it anymore, we get it, what we wanted. The very thing that we were hankering so much for and suffering so much for and lamenting about because we couldn't get, or we got it but we couldn't keep it. And it may be very complex and convoluted. I know in my situation there's so many desires that I've had that I couldn't fulfill, or if I could, it wasn't when I wanted to, or after the fact, after I didn't care about it anymore. So that's Krishna's special arrangement. He's there manipulating things to purify us. And Srila Visvanatha Chakravarti, he also mentions that in that famous verse of the 11th canto, Tatenu Kampam Susamikshamano Bunjana Evapmik Kritam Vipakam Hidvag Vapuber Vedanamaste Jivetiyo Mukti Pare Sadaya Bhak. He says that for the devotee, there's no more karma, really. We've engaged in devotional service, we've chanted the holy name, there's no more karma. But nonetheless, Krishna is managing our material desires in such a way that we will give them up and become detached. And so we need Krishna's help to do that. You know, it's like once the jiva comes into this material world, it's like stepping into quicksand. You know what quicksand is. And quicksand, actually, I've never seen quicksand here in America. There's probably some, but it develops in areas where there's deserts or places where it's very dry for a long time and then suddenly there's lots of rain. And then there's one little pocket that remains kind of wet and full of water, and everything else is dry around it. So when you're walking along, you don't see it. But once you step into it, you get stuck. And the more you try and get out of it, the more you sink. Each time you move, you sink a little bit more. So karma is like that. A material attachment is like that. And once you get stuck in it, it's very hard to get free. So Prahlad Maharaj, he prays. He says that the normal materialistic person, they become bewildered and they start following the blind leading the blind. He says there's no hope for that person unless they contact the lotus feet of the Lord. Unless they make that contact with the lotus feet of the Lord, they can't become free. But he says it's such an unfortunate situation because a materialistic person, they're not attracted to the lotus feet of the Lord. So how can they contact the lotus feet? There's no attraction. And he says, therefore, unless they get the dust of the pure devotees of the Lord, if they get the dust of the pure devotees of the Lord, then they develop attraction for the Lord's lotus feet, and then this knot within the heart can become cut. So we have to, have that higher taste, develop that higher taste. We have to have that as our spiritual foundation. Of course, the beginning of that higher taste is just to understand our spiritual nature, to begin to see, that we're not the body, that we're not the mind, to have that experience, to focus our attention on the self, become established in the self, in that relationship with Krishna. That's the beginning of the higher taste. And then we have some firm foundation. But we have to continually contact the lotus feet of the Lord and serve the pure devotees of the Lord to stay in that protected position. Otherwise, we all know that it's easy to fall back into the quicksand again and become bewildered. So, is there any other points or questions about this verse or purport? Yeah?
So are we're not supposed to be affectionate to our family and Kunti's family were the Pandavas, they were the great devotees of Krishna, and the Vrishnis are Krishna's eternal associates, great devotees. How is it to understand that we're not supposed to be affectionate to to our families, and even if they're devotees, it seems like she's, or is that what she's saying? What does she mean?
Yeah, she's saying kick them all out and leave right away. No. That's a good question. And what she's saying is that it's a balancing act, really. A devotee should be aware of his spiritual self. When we become aware of our spiritual self, then we understand that we're just playing a role. And so it's like watching a movie. If you go in and you're watching a movie, and you know you're watching the movie, you can enjoy the movie, but at the same time, you're not going to suffer. But if you become totally absorbed in the movie and absorbed, you know, identified with the character, then you suffer. And people we see, they laugh, they cry. And when you walk out, you're like in this bewildered state, like, who am I? It takes time to remember again. And so if we're cultivating spiritual life, if we're chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshiping the deity, associating with the devotees, those five things, and then we're spending time on spiritual awakening. And gradually we'll develop an awareness all the time that we're not this body, we're not this mind, and we'll see that what's going on. So even though we're going through the motions, we're not caught up in it. Or we'll become, as Krishna would say, you become like the lotus flower that is stuck in the mud but never touches it. So by cultivating spiritual awareness, we become like that. And in fact, we become more affectionate rather than less affectionate because we see the real person, you know, there, and we develop a spiritual attachment for others. And then we're more tolerant, we're more compassionate, we're less selfish, and we actually get along better in our relationships because of that. So we don't have to artificially detach ourselves. All we have to do is work on developing our awareness of ourself and our relationship with the Lord and cultivate that attachment. And then we'll see that material life is very fragile, but we won't be afraid to look at that, the fragileness of it. We won't be in denial, but we'll break through the denial. And therefore, in confidence, we can have genuine, unselfish, unmotivated, compassionate, nonviolent relationships with our family members and with others.
And Prabhupada makes the point that we have to give up that exclusivity, that the miserly attachment, in order to be able to, even mundane, like political leaders and things like that, have to be engaged for the welfare of all, of larger people, not just their own family members. And that in this Sankirtan movement, that because we're always thinking of how to go out and bring Krishna consciousness to the fallen souls, that we don't get caught up in that miserly, let me just protect my own little treasure with my own little family and my own little group. But she's addressing him, oh universal soul, oh form of the universe, oh, you know, controller of the universe in this very universal way. And I was thinking of when we sang the bhajan today, Toma Vina Bine Keache Amara, that Narottam was saying, don't kick me away from your reddish lotus feet, other than you, who is really my beloved? When we understand that, then we can really engage in the welfare of all. Sarva Bhuta Hite Ritaha.
Yeah, just a comment further to this point about cutting off ties to an affection to family members, which the purport says a pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activity of devotional service for all forgotten souls. But when you read something like this, it would seem that you really cannot take it at face value to cut off ties with family and affection. That what is recommended, it would seem, to be consistent with other positions like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is said, don't change your position where you are, but take up devotional service. That it would seem what it is saying is that it is not the relationship that you have to cut off, but really the attachment that you have to an exclusive group. That needs to be softened so you can turn your attention to others. And then, of course, after you turn the attention to others, as you said, more affection may develop to those that you have been associated with. But definitely the recommendation is not for cutting off relationship, because it will go back to the old view, which is renunciation. Walk away from the family and go to the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said, you don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. Don't change your position, but take up devotional service and extend your broader horizon to the other souls.
Also in this purport, I think in the context, is really, you could say that Prabhupada's referring to himself and to others like him, that at a certain point in their life, you take sannyas, or you dedicate your time now to helping others in a big way. So just like Srila Prabhupada, when he was 54 years old, he did leave his family. And then he prepared himself for a number of years. He went to Vrindavan and Delhi, and he dedicated himself to humanity. And he did leave his home. He didn't, spend any more time there. And so many in our line also did that. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did that. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur ultimately did that. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he never got married, because from the beginning he considered the world his family. Even if you ask, priests of other religions, like my uncle is a Catholic priest, and I used to ask him, when I was young, I was curious. We weren't Christian. I wasn't brought up Christian or Catholic, but he became a Catholic after he got out of college. So he wasn't even raised Catholic. So it wasn't well understood in our family. So I used to ask him many questions. So I said, where do you get the determination to be a priest and not be married? And I always thought his answer was really kind of far out. He said, the reason that I've never gotten married is because if I got married, then I would have to dedicate myself to my wife and my family. And the reason, therefore, I'm not married, I'm a priest, so that I can dedicate myself to all of humanity. And so there is a point where Prabhupada's saying in here that where one doesn't disregard his family, but he feels compelled to work for the benefit of all beings, and that may entail leaving one's family. And he's using the word in here, broad. When you have broad vision, then you start to see everyone as your family, not just family.
So the corollary of this thing can be, if one is not leaving one's family, if one actually is not equally well-wishing for the entire humanity. Is that a correct corollary?
Well, I would say you could look at it that way. If you're looking from it from a strict kind of Varnashram Dharma point of view, ancient context.
But we saw this in Prabhupada's life.
Yeah. We saw this in Prabhupada's life, but these distinctions are there, but they're not hard and fast. In other words,
I would say every married person is actually attached more to their mamka business.
Yeah, generally speaking, that's the case. So externally, it may appear so. But that doesn't mean that one cannot be a devotee who has realized, has his family, and dedicates his whole time and life for helping others.
Do we know of any example in our parampara or anywhere outside of parampara who is married to a... Do we have an example in our parampara or outside the parampara of a person married with kids, etc., who is actually also demonstrating affinity for the whole world outside of the family?
Yeah. Bhaktivinoda Thakur? How about Lord Nityananda?
Yeah.
How about Advaita Acharya?
In Gita, it's mentioned that Janaka was there first. The father of Sita.
Janaka, yeah.
So even kings like Janaka and others have attained perfection. Karmanaiva hi sangsithim astita janakadaya loka sangraham evapi. Something like that. Sampashil loka sangraham. Anyway, it's third chapter, verse 20.
So there are many examples. And not only that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the householders, in some ways, they actually benefit society at large more than like sannyasis or brahmacharis do, because they're intermingling with all members of society and they're giving their association and their example. So, you know, a devotee of a family man, a devotee of the Lord, a person who is becoming self-realized or is self-realized, is having a great effect on many, many others just by living in the world and setting the proper example and giving association. What to speak of all the pure devotees here at this temple that spend so much time, even though they're working, you know, 40, 50 hours a week and having families, they're still dedicating so much time to their personal self-realization and to the enlightenment of the whole community here. So they're not misers.
Like you were saying before, there's different roles that people are playing, and Krishna is saying in the third chapter that pure devotees can do the same activities that attached people can do, but without attachment, for the purpose of setting an example. Hmm. And the example is there, for example, when Narada Muni came and was received by Yudhishthira Maharaj, and Yudhishthira asked him questions and everything. Prabhupada describes in the purport how, even though Yudhishthira Maharaj is a pure devotee, that he's playing the role of a householder and a king, and therefore a worldly man, and so he shows the proper respect for Narada Muni, who's playing the role of a sannyasi, who's the spiritual master of all the society. So that these are roles that can go on even in a varnashram situation where people are pure devotees playing different roles as householders, sannyasis, brahmacharis, etc. That they're without attachment, but they have to exercise. Like one great example is when Shukadeva was running through the forest, and the women didn't have to even put on their clothes because they knew that he was, he was Avaduta and he didn't see any distinctions. But when Vyasadeva came by, even though he's the personality of Godhead, incarnation, literary incarnation, but because he's playing the role of a householder, so they had to cover their bodies when he came by.
Mm-hmm. So then the question is, why did Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have to actually leave their families? Why were they not successful in managing both the worlds?
Well, you're assuming that they weren't successful, for one.
At the same time.
Yeah.
At the same time.
So each one had their different reasons, you know, and it was for preaching, and it was also to set examples. And, we can get into the histories, you know, and there are many, you know, many reasons why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, took sannyas. And there were different reasons why Bhakti Siddhanta emphasized sannyas and Prabhupada took sannyas. Before, you know, between Mahaprabhu and Bhakti Siddhanta, Gaudiya Vaishnavas were not taking sannyas. So it's not an eternal thing. It's something that's useful at particular times and places that will come into fashion and maybe go out of fashion. But the main thing is to cultivate spiritual life for ourselves and become realized and then share that with others. And the external, you know, condition of being sannyasi, it really doesn't matter. What really has potency is that if we have, you know, realization, then we can give that to somebody else. And if we don't, then we can't give it. So I like the expression that when the meal is prepared, people will come to eat. You know, so, you know, when we're cooked, then Krishna will arrange for us, you know, to share the meal. And that's how it works. And all these, you know, sannyas, not sannyas, it's just external. Doesn't really matter so much. It's a preaching ploy. And sometimes it's useful and sometimes it's not. But, you know, being a realized soul is being a realized soul, whether you're a householder or not. And that's where the real potency comes from. It's getting too late. So, good. This good discussion here. It's an important topic because we're all householders.
Yeah.
And we all have attachments and we all have family members, as it should be. You know, sannyas is not recommended in the Kali Yuga. But it is recommended to become a pure devotee of the Lord. And just naturally, we just have to be ourselves. We don't have to be anything extra. We just have to share according to our capacity what we've learned with others in an organic, natural way. The mission of the Lord is fulfilled. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavatam ki jai.